20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You are wonderful, beautiful people for joining me here today to talk some Green Bay Packers, as always, 365 days a year, right here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can find us on the YouTube channel. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you're not checking out the audio channel, by the way, make sure to do so. Here on the YouTube channel, we have the videos, but we have a bunch of other audio podcasts that come out on the audio station as well. So make sure to subscribe over there if you are only on YouTube. And if you're not checking out YouTube, make sure to do that as well. And make sure to subscribe, become a member, like, comment, give those five-star reviews. Those things help the channel more than you guys know. It helps the algorithm. It helps more people discover it. And if that's too much, we'll just tell a friend about it. Tell a family member, and word of mouth always helps a ton as well. But we've got a ton to get into. I'm using today as sort of a little bit of a grab bag of everything that's kind of happened over the last couple of days, just some thoughts, some musings, some things that have gone on that have caught my attention. So we'll get into all of that, some news, some notes, some rumors, all of it today. So we're going to get through as much as possible and just kind of break it all down and just, like I said, kind of a grab bag episode for everything that's, you know, kind of all encompassing throughout the course of these last couple of days. Before we get there, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Daryl Johnson, Brandy Lewis, Eddie Jansen, and Bennett Myers. Cannot thank you guys enough for signing up. Again, if you haven't checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. All right, let's get with some just general news and notes first. The first report is that AJ Dillon is in fact going to be moving on and signing with another team outside of Green Bay. The reports are that he is healthy enough to play, which I want to just say, first of all, is fantastic news. With AJ, with the neck injury and stuff like that, we've seen enough with the Terrence Murphys and the Nick Collins and the, you know, Jonathan Franklin's, not all necks, but like just different injuries that have happened to some of these players that can immediately cause, huge problems and potentially end careers. Sterling Sharp, we can go on and on. And, you know, Jonathan Franklin, like there's too many players that have had an injury situation that has cut a career short. JaMychal Finley. And the big hope here was that Dillon was not going to have to end his career, that he would be able to continue to play. And that is the biggest piece of good news. But as I have talked about on a few different occasions here, if I were AJ Dillon or if I were his agent, I would say there is no chance I'm going back to Green Bay, or there's no chance he should go back to Green Bay. That's nothing against Dillon. That's nothing against, you know, the situation, that because of his injury or anything like that. That is strictly due to the running back depth chart in Green Bay. Green Bay has four running backs right now, four legitimate 53-man running backs in Josh Jacobs, who is not going anywhere. Marshawn Lloyd, who is not going anywhere. I mean, there's a really good chance that Green Bay keeps only three running backs. And if Dillon came to Green Bay, you would literally have to fight it out with Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson just for one of those spots. Even if it's two, it probably Brooks and Wilson have the advantage there. So you're going to need an injury or two just to be kind of in the conversation to make a 53-man roster in Green Bay. Green Bay is not going to want to offer you anything, probably not even any sort of signing bonus. So there's really no incentive there. And then that doesn't even include potential draft picks in a very strong running back draft where there could be multiple rounds, fifth, sixth, seventh round, where Green Bay's on the clock and they look up at their board and the best available players are running back. Now, they may not necessarily take him because they know that their running back room is stacked, but there's this very strong chance that they just see a running back that's on their board in late day three and say, it's just the best player. Let's just take him and see what happens. And if that happens, then Dillon's even more behind the eight ball. So I don't see any world in which coming back to Green Bay would have made any sense for AJ Dillon. If Dillon would have called Goody up or Dillon's agent would have called Goody and friends up and said, hey, we're willing to take a 1 year vet minimum $0 signing bonus, I would have said, you know, Goody absolutely should do that. There's no harm in it. If you cut him at cutdown times, there's zero repercussions. There's no dead cap hit in that situation. So, you know, a good GM, of course, is going to say yes to that. But if I'm Goody, I'm probably saying like, hey, we'll do this. But just so you know, it's probably going to take a couple injuries for you to make this team. And if so, so be it. But it just makes all the sense in the world for Green Bay to move on. It makes sense for Dylan to go in another direction. But again, the great news here is that Dylan is healthy, that he's going to be able to play. Hopefully not Chicago, Minnesota, like these things that always happen. But it will not be in Green Bay. And I think that's the right decision for all parties here. And wishing AJ the best moving forward. You know, we'll see if he gets to keep the key to Door County or not, but we'll certainly, I know, be rooting him on moving forward as he finds a new team, as long as it's not in the division. And it's not, as long as he's not playing against the Packers, of course. Another player that is moving on is Eric Stokes, who is signing a new one-year deal with the Atlanta Falcons. It's, you know, they're collecting, you know, it'd be awesome if they're starting corners at some point next year. Kevin King's a free agent, but if they somehow brought him back and during some game, Kevin King and Eric Stokes were their starting corners, it would just be phenomenal. But I digress. This is, to me, and I want to cheer all these guys on. You guys know this. I don't need to go through it verbatim again, but this was the right move. And I'm very excited, quite frankly, that Green Bay is not trying to do something here like they did with Kevin King and have done with some of these players where they just latch on a little bit too long because they were a first round pick, or, you know, because they've got a, like they could have done the same situation that they did with AJ Dillon with Stokes, where Stokes gets a little bit more money, but it doesn't count against the salary cap. There's that fifth year benefit out there for players that return to their teams, that they could have done some of this stuff. And this is another one where I just felt like it made sense for both sides to go in a different direction. And Stokes got every opportunity in year four last year. And I mean every opportunity. All of OTAs, mini camps, training camp, he was the number one corner opposite Jair Alexander. He was the guy. And, you know, Carrington Valentine couldn't even get reps with the starters because Stokes was it. And Stokes then got the starts to begin the season. And by the end of the season, he basically found himself almost entirely out of the rotation. And the writing seemed to be on the wall at that point in time. But again, you never quite know what's going to happen in these situations. And if Green Bay, it's like, well, we spent a first round pick on him and we've invested this time, effort, and energy, and he's been good in the locker room or whatever the case may be, and let's just bring him back for another stint. It was time for both to move on. For Eric Stokes, sometimes when you're a first round pick, you have all that pressure coming into a new team, and it does. For him, it started great. His first year as a rookie was not phenomenal, not fantastic, but it was a really strong rookie season. Clearly the best season of his career. And it looked like Green Bay had found a legit starting corner. And it looked like Jair and Stokes were going to be not maybe shutdown corners, but the two foundational pieces of that secondary for the foreseeable future starting in 2022. And then it just never happened that way. And it's very frustrating to look back on. But For the Falcons, they get a former first-round pick who has talent and maybe just a new change of scenery, a new scheme, whatever it might be, does him well, and he can take off in Atlanta. And if so, kudos to Eric for making that work. Again, sometimes you just get in a rut in one spot, and you just need a new defensive backs coach, whatever it might be, and we'll see if Stokes can maybe go on and flourish in Atlanta. For Green Bay, again, they gave him every opportunity. As a rookie, he looked good. As a second-year player prior to the injury, he looked brutal. Then he had the injuries, knocked him out the remainder of 2022. 2023, he's out almost the entire year. He comes back for a couple games, looks extremely rusty. 2024 gets all the opportunity and still struggled in 2024. Yes, at the end of the year, there were a couple games. Go watch the tape. It had a lot more to do with him just not getting targeted as much than anything else. And there were a couple good games in there. That legitimately, there were a couple solid games in there. There was no real breakout sign, and there was a reason he was basically benched by the end of the year. This was a good move for Green Bay. And one of the crazier, more unbelievable statistics, or I don't know, maybe it's believable, I guess, but Eric Stokes went over 818 consecutive snaps in coverage. I'm not just talking all snaps, all right? These are just coverage snaps. 818 plus coverage snaps without either a interception or even a pass breakup. Over 818 coverage snaps without a pass breakup or an interception. Just one time where he batted the ball away. 818 coverage snaps. His last pass breakup was in week 16 of 2021, his rookie season. He ended with one career interception as a Green Bay Packer. Now, injuries played a part. I understand that. But, man, that beginning of 2022 was already giving me some cause for concern because he looked really bad before he even went out with the injury, and he was just never able to recover. And whether it was injuries or whatever the case may be, that ends up as a pretty massive bust for Brian Gutekunst and the Green Bay Packers. First-round pick, 2021. Reached a little bit for him, no question about it. Most considered him a mid-second-ish round pick, and they took him at the end of round one. And first year, looked the part, right? Made some big plays, basically took over as almost the pseudo number one corner in his rookie season with the Jaire injury, and just never got it back. Unbelievably disappointing. It was time to move on. He moved on, Green Bay moved on, and it was the right direction for both teams. And I really give credit here to Goody and company. We've seen Green Bay in the past make these decisions of like, oh, we're just going to hold on to our guys. And I kind of talked about a little bit already, but Josh Myers does not seem like he's going to be back, second round pick. Eric Stokes, not going to be back, first round pick. Like, they are willing to go in a different direction with some of these players, regardless of how high of a draft pick that they were. One of the worst things that you can do is double down. You know, we can say what we want about Kevin King, but they had maybe made the decision a little bit sooner. Maybe he's not in that situation in the 2020, you know, NFC Championship game, right? So, like, there could have been different ways that they could have gone during that time frame. And I think sometimes you can get in this, you know, this idea, whether it's a sunk cost fallacy or whatever you want to call it, of just like, you know, continuing to pump resources, being like, hey, it's right around the corners, the breakout. And at some point, you just have to cut your losses. And I think Green Bay did a really nice job with Myers and Stokes and some of these other players that, you know, they haven't retained, of understanding it was time to move on. That was one of my biggest fears this offseason, was just going to be retaining Stokes, retaining Myers. And thankfully for Green Bay, they did not do that. However, it does mean that two draft classes now are in very perilous spots when it comes to remaining players. Now, 2020 still has Jordan Love, so that is a pretty big remaining player on that 2020 draft class. If Jordan Love goes out and performs well for the remainder of this contract, that will be a home run draft no matter what. But he's the only person left now that Dylan will be leaving from the 2020 draft class. 2021 is significantly worse, with TJ Slayton gone to Cincinnati, Eric Stokes gone to Atlanta, all reports and just common sense pointing to Josh Myers playing elsewhere in 2025. The only player left from the 2021 draft class is now Isaiah McDuffie. So from 2020, 2021, Green Bay only has two draft picks left from those two classes. And in 2020 is a little bit further off, like that, you know, we're in 2025 now. These things go fast in the NFL, but through two classes, 2020, 2021, only Jordan Love. That's a kind of a big one, but Jordan Love and Isaiah McDuffie, the two players left from those respective draft classes. Some updated signings from Tuesday. Joey Bosa goes to the Bills. I was surprised he got over $10 million per year. Again, he's played about 1,000 snaps combined over the last 3 years and has just not been able to stay healthy. Buffalo, interestingly, releases Von Miller and then picks up Joey Bosa. So they're definitely taking a bit of a lottery ticket there with Bosa. Minnesota got incredibly active on Tuesday morning, signing Javon Hargrave, although they can't do it till Wednesday because the 49ers aren't officially releasing him until Wednesday. But Javon Hargrave is being released by 49ers, and the Vikings already have an agreement with him, which is allowed because the 49ers gave Hargrave that ability to speak to other teams. They signed Jonathan Allen to a massive 3-year, $60 million deal, the former Washington Commander. I'm slightly confused as to why, like, it probably would have been worth Minnesota trading like a conditional 7th round pick for Allen to keep him on the contract he was on. Now, maybe Allen would have wanted a new contract and it would have been a thing anyway, but that could have been something that Minnesota looked at a little bit more. But they give him a 3-year massive $60 million contract. And then Will Freeze, you know, arguably the top guard. It's a lot of people had Freeze as the better guard over Aaron Banks. Minnesota grabs him as well. So trench is a big thing for them. Getting Javon Hargrave, Jonathan Allen, and Will Freese. There's a couple others we'll talk about in just a moment as well. But big day for Minnesota. Giants get arguably the top remaining free agent that was on the board in Javon Holland. And then my guy, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine from the Tennessee Titans. He goes to Miami. Jerks. You were supposed to let him get to Green Bay. I don't think Green Bay really had any interest. It probably wasn't going to move the needle one way or the other. But he was definitely somebody I liked and enjoyed, kind of keeping an eye on this free agency period, but he goes to the Miami Dolphins. If you're looking at what the division's done so far, the Bears, extremely trenches oriented. Grady Jarrett, defensive tackle. Dio Odenigbo, defensive end / defensive tackle. Drew Dolman, center. Traded for Jonah Jackson, guard. Traded for Joe Tooney, guard. And then Durham Smythe, the tight end, more of a blocking tight end. This has been completely about the trenches for the Chicago Bears so far. And listen, Chicago Bears fans, I know there's all none of you listening anyway. You've had a really nice offseason so far. And I think it's fair to be complimentary of the offseason. They've had a very specific approach attacking the trenches. Jarrett might be past his prime, and Odenigbo is certainly a little bit of a risk, but I like both of the players. I think they're going to help that pass rush in Chicago. Drew Dolman, I think a little bit overpriced, but in Tooney giving up a fourth, whatever, I think they certainly paid for it here, but they had to have intention with upgrading their lines, both the offensive line and the defensive line. They were smart about it, and this was actually a coherent, I think mostly well-executed plan by Chicago, which is making me throw up in my mouth a little bit and is just rare to see. Add on top of that, getting Ben Johnson as head coach and some of the coaches and coordinators, they've had a good offseason. I don't think there's any, you know, really way around it. But I will say this, Chicago Bears fans, maybe just wild thought, crazy thought, I know, but just general word of advice. Maybe after years and years and years and years and years and years of claiming that this was going to be the time that your team turned it around and this was the most unbelievable offseason and it was the winning offseason of all offseasons, the offseason to end all offseasons, and Caleb Williams is going to save you and, you know, whatever new coach, Matt Nagy was going to save you. Mitch Trubisky was going to save you. And Clinton Dix was going to save you. And we can go on and on and on and on. I like your offseason. I think it's a really good offseason. But maybe, just maybe, rather than claiming victory and putting the whole world on notice that the Chicago Bears are now untouchable, maybe just let the season play out a little bit first. See how things go. Because it hasn't worked out great for you in the past when you've, you know, really celebrated those offseason victories. So far be it from me, just a general word of advice to maybe just tone it down a little bit on the victory laps in the offseason again. Lions lose Carlton Davis. They replace him with DJ Reed so far. That's kind of the main Lions move. And then the Vikings, Sam Darnold's gone. That's a huge thing. And it seems a little bit weird. It seems like JJ McCarthy's going to be the starter, which I think he's actually going to be good. I do. But they haven't seemed to have like this legitimate full confidence, and maybe that's just due to the injury. They lose out on Daniel Jones on Tuesday, and it's going to be interesting now to see who that vet quarterback is. It does not seem like it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. It seems like Rodgers is choosing between the Giants and the Steelers. And then, you know, there's been some Jameis Winston. Could it be? I don't think it's going to be Russell Wilson. That's a really interesting position that they're in right now as to what quarterback makes sense to pair theoretically or potentially with, you know, JJ McCarthy as the likely new starter in Minnesota. But they also very trenches oriented. Javon Hargrave is in, as we mentioned, Will Freese, the guard from Indianapolis, Jonathan Allen, defensive tackle from Washington. They re-signed Byron Murphy, the corner, to a massive deal. Aaron Jones is back. Isaiah Rogers, the nickelback from Philadelphia. Prior, he played for Indianapolis. And then Ryan Kelly, the center from Indianapolis as well. So they've really focused mostly on the trenches with Hargrave, Freeze, Jonathan Allen, and Ryan Kelly. But I've also really kind of upgraded their roster, knowing theoretically that they're going to have a rookie quarterback. And they have the ability to spend everywhere else because they have a really cheap rookie quarterback that's leading the team. That's kind of a way to put a great team together if you can get the good play from the quarterback. And I don't think there's any doubt for me that JJ McCarthy can kind of replicate what Sam Darnold did a season ago. You add in some of these other players, it's going to be a tough Minnesota team too. So division's been very active. Detroit, not as much, but Chicago, Minnesota, both very, very active so far. We're going to eventually get to Nate Hobbs and Aaron Banks, and I'm going to do, as I always do this time of year, deep dives into both of these guys. I can't say exactly when. It might be very, very soon. It might be still some time. I want to go through and grade these players as well at some point, at least in 2024. That takes a lot of time to do. So there will be different probably versions of this, but we'll get into more breakdowns from myself personally as I get through all the tape and things like that. It just takes time. And you guys know me, I'm not going to half-ass it. It's going to be legitimate. I'm going to go through and watch every single snap from 2024 for both of these guys eventually. And we'll get there, right? It's not one for me. If you're showing up, it's not going to be just, you know, quantity. I'm going to put the time, effort, and energy into it. And hopefully that's why you're here. Hopefully that's what you like, because that's what you're going to get more often than not. But just a note on Aaron Banks. This is from Brandon Thorne, who I think is the ultimate offensive line guru that covers the NFL. This was his evaluation of Aaron Banks going into free agency. Quote, Banks is a big body, 6'5", 325, with 33 1/8 inch arms at left guard. He made 43 starts over his first four seasons, including 16, 14, and 13 over the last 3 years since becoming a full-time starter. Banks performed at a functional level last year, but has dealt with a rash of injuries that included a broken finger, concussion, and MCL injury. On film, Banks plays with an upright style and shows mediocre recovery skills that get him out-leveraged and leave him susceptible to clean losses in pass protection. Banks consistently looks for work when uncovered and uncorks on adjacent defenders to keep the pocket clear. He pairs solid initial quickness with heavy hands and a physical demeanor in the run game to get to his spots on time, cover up, and wall off defenders. However, he struggles to consistently sustain blocks late in the rep due to getting slipped. I cannot stress to you enough how much this shows up on tape. It shows up a lot. We'll get into that more as I do my breakdown, but this is very much worth noting. Banks is a functional option as a starting guard and could fill in as the fifth best starter on a good unit and potentially serve as the fourth best starter on a younger, less experienced group. It's a big contract for a player that could fill in as the fifth best starter on a good offensive line or potentially a fourth best starter on a young, less experienced group. That consistently sustaining blocks one is the big one. Just gets to his spot, has the size, the strength, the speed, the athleticism, has everything that you need. Just sustain the block. It is so frustrating on tape. And he's got everything that he needs, but the inconsistency, and I know Brandon tweeted out about the inconsistency as well. He and I saw the exact same things on tape. I'm not saying I'm as good as Brandon at breaking down offensive line play, but we were very much in lockstep with our evaluations. I'm like 9-10 games through on Banks, just to get an initial watch through. But that's what I'm seeing, a lot of the same stuff as Brandon. And like I said, Brandon's phenomenal at breaking down offensive linemen. For Nate Hobbs, we got the contract details. His cap hit in 2025 is going to be $5.9 million. Basically, let's round this thing up, $6 million in 2025, $13 million in 2026, $14 million in 2027, and $14.7 million in 2028. I think that's a lot of people look at contracts this way. Again, they look at just what the cap number is going to be, right? 5.9, 13, 14, 14.7. And it's just a logical way to look at it. For anyone that's been listening to me for a while, I don't think that's ever the right way to look at it. I think you have to look at what it would be if they got out of this contract at different points, right? So what would it be if he only played 1 year in Green Bay? What would it be if he played 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years? Because those are the only options. There's always restructures and extensions, but barring a restructure or an extension, those are the only options. He's going to either play 1 year, he's going to play 2 years, he's going to play 3 years, or he's going to play 4 years under this contract. If he plays 1 year, he will make $18 million in total. It'll be a $15.9 million, or basically a $6 million cap hit this year, and a $12 million cap hit next year. So yeah, it's great that he only makes $6 million this year, but if you cut him after this year, you're going to take a $12 million cap hit next year, and you will have counted $18 million against the cap. So if he plays one season, he's going to count $18 million against the cap in totality. Breaks up into separate years, but that's what you're ultimately going to pay from a salary cap standpoint, which, by the way, is the only thing I ever care about. I do not care what dollars and cents are leaving Green Bay's individual bank account from their debit card or whatever. I don't care if they're PayPaling or using Bitcoin or anything in between. I do not care. I hope all these players get paid. I hope all of their checks are clearing. I hope Green Bay is financially solvent. I know that they are. I don't care about any of that. The only thing I care about as a fan is how it affects the salary cap, because those are finite amount of resources. So I'm always looking at it from a salary cap standpoint. If he plays 1 year, he will count $18 million against the salary cap. If he plays 2 years in Green Bay, and this is where I think there's a misconception, because people will say, well, they can get out of it after 2 years. Well, yeah, you'll have paid him $6 million in year one. You'll have paid him $13 million in year two. And then you're going to pay $8 million in dead cap in that third year. So yes, it's great that you got out of it after year two. Guess what? You will have paid $27 million total against the salary cap in three different years, but $27 million total for 2 years of play. That is $13.5 million per year. It's not terrible, but there's a cost there, right? Like, so it's just worth noting, because you look at it and you say, well, it's a 4 year, $48 million deal. So it's going to be 12 mil per year, but they can get out of it after 2 years. So it's not going to be as much. No, if they get out of it after 2 years, they pay them 13.5 mil per year, not 12 mil per year. So that actually, the cost per year actually goes up in that situation. If he plays 3 years in Green Bay, he will have made a total of $37 million against the salary cap, which is 12.3 mil per year. And if he plays 4 years, he will have made all 48 million, all 48 of it will go against the cap, and it'll be 12 million per year. So that's the breakdown of the Nate Hobbs contract. By the way, I was looking up some stuff on Nate Hobbs, and just as I was kind of going through some stuff, Nate Hobbs had zero penalties in 2024, not a single one. That is a bizarre, crazy, wild statistic, especially for somebody playing in the slot. The amount of players that play that have like the two-way goes, and like you're just as a corner, part of the job description at a point in time is going to be that you're going to get beat, and you just need to grab that guy and bring him to the ground or pass interfere and make sure that you're not giving up a big play. Like it's just part of the job description at times. Zero penalties in 2024 is a wild statistic, and I don't even know if that's a great thing. It's obviously good. It means he's not panicking and not getting caught at the point of attack and things like that. Usually means he's getting his head turned and staying out of compromising situation. So overall, it's a good thing. But like I said, sometimes as a DB, it's like in soccer, sometimes you need to get a yellow card or a red card to stop a play, make sure that they're not getting a one-on-one or a free goal or whatever it might be. And you've got to eat the yellow or red card because it's just a tactical foul. Sometimes in football, you need the tactical foul. I don't know if I haven't seen anything that would lend me to believe that he didn't do that. I'm just saying it's a crazy statistic that he's had zero penalties in this past year and only 11 in his career in 2,890 career snaps. So just a wild, wild number that he, again, didn't have any this past year. Looking at Matt Bowen, who does, I think, as phenomenal of a job as anybody doing a top 100 pre-free agency. So he goes through and watches all the tape on these guys and puts together a top 100 of the best free agents on the market. Just looking back at it, I didn't have a chance to look at it until today. And Aaron Banks was number 35 on his list of top 100 free agents, and Nate Hobbs was number 46. So for whatever that's worth, I just thought it was interesting to see where both of those guys ranked. I'm actually interested. I don't even know that I looked at what, because we use PFFs a lot when we were kind of breaking down what free agents Green Bay would potentially sign. Aaron Banks was number 72 on PFFs, and then Hobbs was number 85 on PFFs. But just to kind of take it a step further, again, I think Bowen does as good of a job as anyone with it. He had Banks at 35 and Hobbs at 46. On Tuesday, we got the full list of draft picks for all the teams in the full draft order. Green Bay ends up with 8 selections. They got the compensatory pick for Yosh Nijman that we expected, a 7th rounder, 250th overall in the draft. Their overall draft capital is a 1st rounder, pick 23, a 2nd rounder, pick 54, a 3rd rounder, pick 87, a 4th rounder, pick 124, a 5th rounder, pick 159, a 6th rounder, pick 198, a 7th rounder, pick 237, and a compensatory 7th rounder, pick 250. So 23, 54, 87, 124, 159, 198, 237, 250, and that is it. 8 picks, as Brian Gutekunst would say, for now. For now, because you know he's going to want to try to acquire as many as he can. Let's get to the rumor mill a little bit and some of these remaining free agents that are still out there and maybe some potential trades. One name that came up at the end of day on Tuesday, and if you're wondering if I'm taking this from the random Ricky account on Twitter, yes, I am. Do I believe in it? Do I have any real inkling that this is a real thing? I don't. He's hit on a bunch. He's missed on some. I don't know what he knows. He probably knows nothing. Maybe he knows everything. No idea. But a name that came up was Dante Fowler. And like I said, this account in particular is hit on wide range of players who have already signed with some teams. A couple misses, but a lot of hits. I don't know that Dante Fowler is going to end up in Green Bay. Maybe as you're listening to this, he's already a member of the Green Bay Packers. He's an interesting player. 31 in October, so he's not a spring chicken. He's not one of these 25, 26, 27 year olds, 31 in October. 6'3", 261, so mostly fits kind of what Green Bay looks for at that defensive end position. Was the third overall pick in Jacksonville in 2015. Had a 6.97 relative athletic score coming out of college, so 70th percentile athlete. 60.5 PFF grade this past year. Did have 50 pressures. Had 11 sacks, which is a nice number, especially on 50 pressures. Of those 50 pressures, it was 11 sacks, 5 hits, and 34 hurries. Did have a 25.6% missed tackle rate, which is a very, very bad missed tackle rate. That's missing one out of every four tackles that you get the opportunity to execute. That is a lot of missed tackles. Had a 63.6 pass rush grade and a 52.3 run defense grade. He is basically a pass rusher mercenary at this point that you're going to get some pressures out of. I am not super enthused by this, mostly because it feels like it would be a piece of the puzzle, and it just doesn't move the needle all that much for me. It's fine, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't really do anything more than, it does a little bit more than what like a Preston Smith would have been this past year and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. It would be fine. It would certainly not move the needle for me in any sort of significant way. But if they do in fact sign him, I'll go through and watch the tape a little bit more. I watched a handful of snaps, but I'll go through and watch a lot more and maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. But this is not one that generally, you know, catches my fancy all that much, if I'm being honest. As far as remaining free agents that Green Bay could potentially target, I've got 10 different names for you that I still think are out there that maybe Green Bay could have some potential interest in. Let me start by saying this. It's over. Like, there's nothing out there. There's a couple names here that are legitimately intriguing, but it's done. There's nobody major left. Trey Hendrickson's still out there, right? That's the big one. But free agency wise, we're getting to value town at this point, and you just hope that you maybe get the right values. But here's 10 guys nonetheless that at least are some level of intriguing. Dante Fowler is number one. We just talked about him. Whether or not Green Bay is interested will remain to be seen, but apparently that name is out there. He could be one person that Green Bay adds at that defensive end position. I've talked about Levi Nwuzurike a bunch. I think the issue here, back injury, hasn't been super impactful in the NFL. His agent and he are probably looking for a big contract that's going to be tough, especially with the draft having a bunch of defensive tackles, really good defensive tackles in it. And then the other thing too, from a Green Bay standpoint, is a bit redundant to what Devontae Wyatt already gives you. Both kind of in that same, you know, height, weight range, same three technique position for the most part. I like him. I think he'd be a good add to this team. I would be very interested to see Green Bay pick him up, but I don't necessarily see it. I don't think it's going to be the case, but he's, to me, one of the better free agents still on the market. We've talked about MVS, stopgap, deep ball wide receiver, probably isn't going to break the bank, maybe 2 years, $6 million, something like that for MVS, or maybe 1 year, $5 million. Like, to me, just go out, do it, get that deep ball threat. It's not then something that you're forced to get during the draft. Like, if you don't get a speed guy, you're probably looking at some point needing to get a speed guy in the draft. This at least gives you somebody up until the point where Christian Watson comes back, or that you can look at it again in 2026. Clavon Chasen is a very interesting one. 6'3", 245, first round pick in 2020, had a 63.0 PFF grade, but a 74.7 pass rush grade. He is more of a pass rush specialist. He had 29 pressures on 309 rushes, 6 sacks, 4 hits, 19 hurries. And quite frankly, a 59.5 run defense isn't terrible for more of a pass rush specialist. Still only 25 years old, turns 26 in July. Ben Solak had him as one of the more under-the-radar, intriguing free agent options. This was from Solak. Chasen played in 72 games in his career so far. In his first 66, he had 6 sacks. In his last 6 games, he had 4 sacks. In fact, in his one season with the Raiders as a designated pass rusher, he had as many sacks, 5, as he did in 4 years with Jacksonville. He does not have the tools to be anything more than a designated pass rusher, but if he's finally putting together his physical gifts into a strong pass rush profile, he adds value as a third down ringer on a deep defensive line. I'm kind of for it. I kind of like the idea. He did kind of break out a little bit this past year. Maybe Green Bay can keep that going. Azeez Ojulari, we've talked about. I know Nagler really wants Ojulari. Like, Justice and I are more in the we're good sort of category. the big thing with Ojulari, 24 years old, turns 25 in June, 6'3", 240, second round pick in 2021, had 22 pressures this past year, does have 26 sacks in four seasons. So despite being a little bit still raw and young coming out of the draft, missing some time and not being a tier one rusher, still has 26 sacks in 4 years, had a 56.4 overall PFF grade this past year, is a little bit undersized. Not sure he's going to be something that Green Bay is interested in, but he's out there as well. Jedrick Wills, we talked about, former first round offensive tackle. I think he can play left tackle, left guard, and right tackle. Is basically been a bust. And I think this would be sort of an Andre Dillard signing circa 2025 for what Dillard was in 2024. Matthew Judon, it's sort of an interesting one here. He's going to be 33 in August. He's 6'3", 270, so very much a Packers-type defensive end. Had a 43.0 PFF grade this past year, only 25 pressures on 328 pass rush snaps. Looked like he completely hit a wall and just kind of aged. I don't know if age caught up with him or whatever, but in his last two seasons in New England before getting hurt in 2023 and then going to Atlanta in 2024, he had 64 and 69 pressures respectively and had really good run defense in those seasons as well. DeMarcus Covington, familiar with Matthew Judon from their time together in New England. He's the defensive line coach here. Maybe he goes to Goody and says, hey, I can get him back playing the way that he was. And maybe you get him super cheap. I wouldn't hate the flyer. I think he's probably just done. So I don't want to see Green Bay break the bank here, but if you want to take him in on a one-year flyer and see if he can kind of find the fountain of youth a little bit, I wouldn't hate it in that situation. Number eight, Charles Omenihu, somebody I liked coming out of college and has put together an interesting career. He's going to be 28 in August, 6'5", 280. Once again, I'll say it, very much a Green Bay type. Can play outside or inside. So you can play outside on early downs, and then you can kick him inside on passing downs if you want. 62 pressures in 2022 with 7 sacks. Only had 37 pressures in 2023, but had 8 sacks in 2023. So that was good as well. And then this past year only had 347 snaps with a 57.8 pass rush grade and wasn't quite the same. But there's still a lot of talent there. And I think as a rotational piece, you could get something out of him as a early down run defender at defensive end while also being an interior pass rusher at defensive tackle. Number 9, I don't even care at this point. He's 39 years old. Go get Calais Campbell. 6'8", 282. He's still a freak. And guess what? He played fantastic football last year. 616 snaps at age 38 with an 82.3 PFF grade. Had 39 pressures, 5 sacks, 85.9 run defense grade. You can play him at defensive end. You can play him at defensive tackle. He fits a 3-4, a 4-3. You can put him anywhere. He's a veteran presence. He's a captain. He's a beast. He's a freak. He keeps winning. And I don't see him slowing down. He's just that dude. I don't think you want him playing 600 snaps this year, but if you could bring him in and have him play 300 snaps, I think he could help this team. I legitimately do. So I don't even care that he's 39. Go get me Calais Campbell. And then Dylan Radunes, we've talked about as well. Rotational offensive tackle, bust in Tennessee. I think he can play left tackle, right guard, might even be able to play center. Experiment with him a little bit. Another Andre Dillard type signing with a lot more versatility than what Dillard brought to Green Bay this past year. Some trade options. Trey Hendrickson still out there. That's the big one. I don't think Green Bay would be super interested in Brandon Ayuk. That could be another one that's out there. I just don't really see that happening. I talked about Darnell Mooney. I just think Atlanta with now Penix at quarterback is going to be a deep ball thrower, and I don't think they're going to get rid of Darnell Mooney. He's on a fantastic contract. So as much as I would love it, I just don't see it happening. Chris Olave is in a similar situation, just in that New Orleans is somehow still signing guys, and he's also had some concussion issues, if I remember correctly, or at least some injury issues. And I don't know that New Orleans wants to trade him, and I don't know Green Bay would be massively interested. Garrett Wilson, I think Green Bay would be interested, but they just signed Justin Fields. Fields' connection with Garrett Wilson from their time at Ohio State. I don't see the Jets making that move. The only other one that is intriguing to me is Jalin Hyatt, the wide receiver for the New York Giants. He's a deep ball guy in college. Like DeSean Jackson was the comp there. They just re-signed Darius Slayton. Hyatt has not been able to really get on the field in New York and not do anything in New York. Their quarterback situation has been poor. You can probably get him for a cup of coffee. And if I were Green Bay, I know he's 180 pounds dripping wet. He's not their general type of wide receiver, but he is a field stretcher. And I think I would take a flyer if I were Green Bay on Jalin Hyatt. Whether or not they actually do it remains to be seen. The one thing that's still kind of preying on my mind a little bit this offseason is what Goody said about the front four. that they have to be able to win with the front four. Yet here we are, day three, you know, going into day three of free agency, still a lot of time left, but not a lot of players left, and they haven't addressed defensive line at all. And in fact, the only thing that's happened so far is that TJ Slayton is gone. Time left to improve via the draft, a couple free agents left that maybe make a little bit of sense, but it does feel like this is a little bit, for me at least, even Trey Hendrickson or bust. And that's aggressive. That's probably not entirely true. There's ways that they can upgrade this roster. There's no, you know, there's no silver bullet here. There's no perfect solution, but I would be all in on Trey Hendrickson at this point. I think that changes the calculus of the offseason in a significant way. If you told me Green Bay went and got Hendrickson plus, you know, Banks plus Hobbs, I feel like that would be a pretty fantastic offseason for the Packers. Outside of Hendrickson, just not a lot left. If I'm Green Bay, I think if you're looking at a season where they really needed to do something aggressive, this was the season. I think Trey Hendrickson can be that guy. If I were Goody and company, I would be going out and doing that deal as quick as I possibly could to bring an elite pass rusher to Green Bay. I don't need a Dante Fowler. I'm interested in a Clavon Chasen. I'm good with that if you can go out and get the premier guy in the market, and that is Trey Hendrickson. And I don't think it's going to cost a crazy draft pick. Maybe a second, and I think you probably get something back in return along with Hendrickson, but go make it happen, Goody. Go make it happen. All right, that's going to do it for me today. I know we covered a lot of different topics, some free agents that are available, some potential trades, all the things that are happening around the league and with the Packers. Hopefully we get even some more info on Wednesday and have more to talk about tomorrow. I'm sure we'll have stuff to talk about no matter what. Make sure again to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. And if you have not subscribed yet to the Packaday Podcast, I mean, what are you possibly waiting for? Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, most hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Hanel, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Ritaka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keith, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas, Time, and Jay Corner. See you guys all here tomorrow again. Thank you for being here. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.